Get a free bottle of Johnnie Walker Black Label Whiskey when you subscribe to The Spectator in our Black Friday sale. Go to spectator.co.uk/Friday.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Oscar Edmondson and I'm joined today by James Heal and Michael Simmons. And we've had a Reform press conference this morning where they announced that there's been a defection. So James, can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. So this really is a sort of long-standing press conference that was scheduled before Kemi Badenoch's one yesterday. And ostensibly it was to respond to the migration figures released this morning, showing that in 2023 there were net migration of more than 900,000. But in reality, it was more of a sort of state-of-the-party checkup, as it were. So looking at Reform's success in recent weeks, dipping together sort of different bits and updating the media on professionalisation. So there were different stats thrown out, the fact that they've now got 100,000 new members, the fact that Nigel Farage excitingly has more than 1 million followers on TikTok. And the 100,000 member is, no surprise, someone we've heard of, which is Andrea Jenkins. Andrea Jenkins was one of the two-thirds of Tory MPs who lost their seat back in July, someone who's always been a fairly outspoken figure, perhaps, in the Conservative Party. She herself said today when she was defecting that she claimed she was loyal to parties, if not prime ministers, which I think, given she submitted a letter of no confidence, and I think four of the last five or some such, is accurate to say the least. But really, it was about sort of, it was a sort of happy atmosphere there. It wasn't huge in terms of creating news. There was almost a sort of degree of boredom, really, what Farage said. We all knew what he was going to say, really. The figures were terrible. He says the Home Office is broken, etc. So really, it was more about kind of how it looks 6 months out from those elections in the English county councils, talking about the strategy they're doing there, and just saying that Reform is on course, they think, to win hundreds of seats, hundreds of council seats, their prediction. So we await to see if that's the case or not.
Mm. Is there any sense that this is going to be sort of the start of a trend? Any more defections rolling in?
Well, they say they're talking to them always, they're open to conversations. I'll be honest, I don't know how many ex-Tory MPs who want to come back will necessarily go to Reform. Mm. But obviously they are trying to walk a line when they're talking about how, you know, Farage says, I don't want their poison, I don't want to have divisive figures who brought down the last government, but they want a big name. So it's a balancing act. I think it's fair to say Andrew Jenkins and Nigel Farage have always gotten well. They were at Nigel Farage's birthday, his 60th in April. And of course, she used his face infamously on some of her election leaflets, which provoked some sort of smiles in the room when that was announced. But it was a sort of Farage, Jenkins and Zia Yusuf as the party chairman update and talking about what they're doing to kind of try and best the Tories and Labour at their own game. Someone used the analogy to me. They said, you know, we're joining them at the starting line. You know, the Labour, the Tories, Lib Dems are all at the starting line. Meanwhile, we're looking for kids in the lost property bin. You know, this is basically comparing the different stats. And so I think that they feel like they've got much better machinery to go on. It was interesting, Farage was asked about James McMurdoch and the story that came out on The Times over the weekend. And his defence was, you know, James was a paper candidate. And, I mean, interesting defence. But I think it basically shows that, you know, like next time, last time they didn't really have much of an infrastructure. Next time they really want to kind of beef that up as they go into those county council elections. Where, you know, places like Thurrock was previously a UKIP stronghold. Lincolnshire, they're very hopeful. Andrew Jenkins is going to be the candidate for the mayor of Greater Lincolnshire. And so I think they're really looking to take a big, sizable chunk of the Tory seats. And, you know, I think it's notable, Kemi Badenoch, for instance, has taken a few points off Labour, not really made much of a dent in that Reform vote, which was one poll out today showing Reform was on 22%. Mm. So at the point where you're getting to kind of 22, 25%, that's when the first past the post, potentially, you know, James McMurdoch won with 31% of the vote in his seat. If you can get that level, first past the post suddenly goes from being a hindrance potentially to a real help, where the brutal logic gets turned on the Tories, where suddenly it's a Reform Labour election. And that's what really they're trying to do in the Senate, as I write about in this week's politics column. And I think also the fact that you can see how worried the Tories are by looking at what's happening in Wales, where there's a bit of a leadership crisis engulfing the Welsh Conservative leader Andrew R.T. Davies.
Yes, yeah, of course. Michael, James mentioned there the migration statistics that we've had today, and you and the rest of the Spectator data team have been chewing over those statistics. What's your take?
Well, the story that both parties, in fact, would want you to take from today's release is that net migration in the year to June is down by a fifth. So Labour will say, great, you know, migration's coming down, we don't need to worry about it. James Cleverly, who of course was once Home Secretary, says this is the result of the policies that I brought in when I was in office, and that was to restrict access to visas for dependents on various categories and to make the worker visas harder to attain. And James Cleverly is sort of backed up by things that the ONS say in their own release. They say, you know, that policy changes carried out over the last few years have made this figure come down. But what the real story is, in my view, is the huge revision to the previous year's figures, which James mentioned in his introduction, means that in 2023, the record high was actually revised up by about 166,000 to a net figure of 906,000. So a simply staggering figure. And if you were to compare, you know, today's figure against the unrevised figure from the year before, migration would just be flat. So the question sort of I've asked on Coffee House today is, can we even like trust these figures at all? The numbers we've crunched in the Spectator data team today, if you look at all the revisions since sort of the ONS started doing these big revisions in 2021, there's actually about 307,000 more migrants discovered today by the ONS that were, you know, previously not known about. And to me, you know, it's just staggering that we're an island. You would think, therefore, it'd be fairly easy to count how many people are coming in and how many people are going out. But what today tells me, and what I think, you know, it should tell our listeners, is not that migration is necessarily coming down. It's that we just don't have a clue if it's going up, down or flat.
And James, Keir Starmer has been very anxious to jump on these new migration figures with a press conference of his own. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a whirlwind 24 hours. Anyone else want to have a press conference? We've had Tories yesterday, Reform this morning, Keir Starmer this afternoon. I'm just waiting for Ed Davey to get off the Christmas number one and start talking about it. But look, this was Keir Starmer's attempt, in the words of one Labour MP I spoke to, this is the red wall equivalent of the fiscal black hole. This is the attempt by Labour, rightly so, to pin what's happened, migration numbers, on the Conservatives. Mm. And there was a great line, I think one of Starmer's best lines since coming into office, where he talked about the Tories. He tapped from the right on migration. He said they've deliberately enacted by design open borders policy post-Brexit. And he was almost mocking at times, you know, global Britain. It was a plan for that. And he made the point, these were consistent choices the Conservatives made in office to liberalise visa requirements. And so he was good on that. And I think that was clear Morgan McSweeney, classic him trying to sort of show that Labour, actually contrary to most popular attitudes and most ideological assumptions, is not going to be the open borders party. And actually, if anything, it was the Conservatives, of course, who I think quadrupled migration between 2019 and 2023. Mm. And, you know, Keir Starmer there almost portraying as the defender of Brexit, suggesting that the mantle had been betrayed over that by saying that this was the post-Brexit choice they made. So it was great politics. But what about the policy? The great announcement today, the thing he was heralding, was the UK-Iraq security agreement they've signed. Law enforcement, shared intelligence, all the joint operations they've been doing, all fine and worthy. But just watching it, I was reminded of Rishi Sunak's conference. Very worthy initiatives, nothing to object to, sensible stuff. Is it going to be the paradigm shift, the game changer? No, it's not. And of course, it's the what's the deterrent going to be? And that's the thing that's lacking from all of this sort of discussion. So, you know, I'm not surprised. I think, you know, Keir Starmer is obviously punching a Tory bruise. As I said in yesterday's episode, migration was one of the key factors driving all voters away from the Conservatives. If you look, for instance, Onwards report polling, they found even Liberal Democrats were put off by the Conservatives on migration. So this isn't a kind of cuddly left. This is one where it's different. This is the Keith Joseph line about what's the difference between the centre ground and the common ground. And actually, most voters are pretty immigration sceptic. And so it's something, I mean, there were parts of Keir Starmer's speech which could always be from Nigel Farage. The question is, of course, is when Labour are in office, how much they're going to bring it down to? Is it going to be to sort of 200,000, 300,000, or is it going to be more 400,000, 500,000? And I just wouldn't interested to see, given the kind of incentives they're responding to in terms of, you know, trade union demands on visas, etc., what that means for the next 5 years or so. And of course, will Keir Starmer, as a result of this, be cancelling Leave to Remain, which will apply to what a lot of people call the Boris wave, you know, the big wave of migration that came in. The positive thing, if you're a sort of immigration liberal, of course, is that we're going to see huge changes as a result of this. And I think potentially in the 2050s, you're going to see a British senior Hong Konger become a cabinet minister. So you might have a British Hong Kong prime minister in the 2050s or 60s, etc. A bit like we saw the Ugandan Asians 60 years ago. The negative, of course, is that, you know, voters are very concerned about migration. And as Michael says, even the basics about how many people are in the country, there are some suggestions that we might have a much bigger population than we actually thought. And of course, that places immense demand on the public service. Look, for instance, at Labour, you know, 36% increase in the asylum bill, and what that means for things like hotels and other bits in the system. So it's all coming into pressure, and so migration is going to be a key part of that.
Mm. Michael, I mean, I'm reminded of your blog title from this morning, where you warned that Labour should be cautious about celebrating the fall in net migration.
Yeah, well, it goes back to my earlier point that essentially, how much can we trust these figures? Every time there's been a net migration release, in certainly since this statistical series restarted, we've had huge revisions. And every time it happens, you think, oh, the quirks must be out of the system by now. The revisions will stop. But it doesn't seem to be happening. But aside from the figure, I think, you know, James hinted at this. It points to what I see as one of the two biggest sort of political lies that we live with. And this is about our control of the migration system and our control of the benefits system. Because if we look at, you know, the way that migration is always presented is effectively, oh no, like all these people are coming on small boats. There's nothing we can do about it. It's not really in the government's control. But, you know, as James said, the visa regimes have been over the years liberalized, and that's why the visa numbers have gone up. Small boats are basically irrelevant. We're talking about, you know, 30,000 people coming on over on small boats compared to 1.3 million, you know, total migration. So if you stopped all the small boats, it's not really going to make a difference to the migration numbers. So the reason to me that the migration numbers have stayed high is for perfectly good economic reasons, that if we want to grow the economy, and the government, the Treasury, the Home Office clearly do, when we have a labour supply problem, they have decided over the last 10 years that the way to address that, and especially since Brexit, is essentially to open the doors on these visas, which is why maybe there is a downturn effect when they've tightened them up over the last year or so. And basically, this is where it links to the benefits problem, which previous editor Fraser Nelson writes about in this week's magazine. When you've got 3,000 people a day being signed off sick, unless you've got some easy solution for that problem, which nobody does, the solution you do have is you keep the visa taps open. So, you know, the government, the Tories, all parties will continue to sort of pretend that this is a difficult issue to solve. And it is, but not because it's hard to actually reduce the number. It's because it's a really difficult economic choice. And I think people should be more upfront about that.
And of course, there are certain levers that Ministers Campbell, James Cleverly, of course, oversaw a 20% reduction rate, not insignificant slashing of the numbers in terms of people coming here.
And James, just finally, big vote happening in Parliament tomorrow on the assisted dying bill brought by Kim Ledbetter. What's the state of play?
Well, everyone's very reluctant to make predictions. I think it's going to be close, is the obvious thing. I suspect less than 30 votes in it. If you look, for instance, at what the Times is saying, they have managed to poll 80% of MPs, found different statements, etc. They give the pro-assisted dying lobby a majority of, say, 60. But then, of course, I was talking to some on the opposite side who were saying, well, there's some on those lists who are sort of registered, but actually they're wavering, or there are a fair number of people who are yet to come out with a position, about 80 or so of those. But I might make the point that even if they sort of split by, say, almost two-thirds in favour of blocking assisted dying, that would still not be enough. So I suspect it will pass tomorrow, but I'm fascinated to how it's all going to play out. You've only got 5 hours. You've got more than 160 MPs want to speak. It's almost like just a minute, 100 seconds each. And so I think that we're going to be seeing some interesting and personal speeches made tomorrow. And I think the more wider point, whatever how the vote goes, this is the day that this new parliament, the most novel in history, where 335 MPs out of 650 were elected for the first time in July. This is the day this parliament comes of age. You have MPs for the first time not relying on their whips, not comfortable in the knowledge that they have a super majority, as Labour has had on every vote, and won by sort of Pyongyang-style numbers. This is MPs thinking for themselves, working what's going on. You've got some who changed their mind, people like Wes Streeting, you know, David Cameron, for instance, as former Prime Minister. He doesn't have a vote, but he's changed his mind on this, switching opposite directions. And you've got some interesting cross-party alliances. You've got people like Edwin Lee and Diane Abbott, the father and mother of the House, coming together to be against it. You've got a lot of younger MPs who are now coming out and saying, I want to vote for it, and I've got these personal stories. And it's going to be a very interesting day, and I suspect it's going to be a parliamentary debate for the ages.
Mm. And you can follow it all on our Coffee House blog. Thank you, James. Thank you, Michael. And thank you very much for listening.